Welcome, everyone, to Productivity Book Group. I'm your host and facilitator, Ray Sidney Smith. Thank you for joining Productivity Book Group with us. Today, we will be discussing Eat That Frog, Get More of the Important Things Done Today by Brian Tracy. It's a highly popular book among those who speak about having conquered procrastination, so I think it'll be a good discussion for us here on Productivity Book Group. We all procrastinate at times, and with good reason, but when it gets out of hand, that's when a book like Eat That Frog can really help us re-engage with us doing now. Let's start out with your initial reactions to Brian Tracy's book and what you thought was the most important of the 21 procrastination-busting techniques he discusses. So who wants to take up that first? What was their favorite? What were your initial responses to the book? And what was your sort of first, what's your top procrastination-busting technique?
This is Denise.
Hey, Denise.
My favorite of the whole book is an introduction. The first rule of the frog is eating is this. If you have to eat two, eat the ugliest one first. But that always makes me crack up when I can't just. So for me, what I like about the Eat the Frog is trying to incorporate it as more motivational than anything else. I mean, you wake up some days, you just can't eat the frog. It's not going to happen. But other days, you can look at it and say, you know what, I got to eat the frog, get it out of the way, move on.
I totally understand that. I mean, it's funny because we all, of course, presume that every day we're going to be able to take the reins and make those big things happen. But sometimes it's tough and it's not going to happen. And I think we have to have a level of compassion with ourselves about that.
Hey, it's Michelle.
Hey, Michelle.
Hi. I think overall my thoughts on the book were that it was sort of. Is there background noise for me? I'm sorry if there is.
yeah, just a little bit.
Okay. I think it's a pretty simple book. I think it felt to me like, as I was reading, I was like, oh yeah, of course. Oh yeah, of course. But I think the compilation of the simple thoughts together is pretty powerful. I think some of my favorite ones, identifying your special talents, or something like that. Also handling things, single handle every task, I think was the name of one of the chapters. And it's basically like, you know, being single focused instead of doing the whole, you know, multitask thing that was crazy around the world. It helps to really, try and focus one at a time on something that you're working on. I think that's really good advice.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, you know, one of the things that really spoke to me about the book was his, you know, sort of very similar to the getting things done perspective, which is to, you know, touch it once. And he's talking about, you know, just really the idea that you're single focusing and instead of trying to multi-focus. So really, really powerful stuff. I think for me, it was the, you know, planning every day in advance. That's got to be the number one sort of most popular item for me. And I just found myself in that place where I was like, okay, I have to plan every day in advance and see if this works. Not because I was necessarily high on procrastination, but because, as I said in the introduction, there's always going to be that time when, you know, things start to slip. Life starts to just come and get in the way, and then it's sort of difficult. And so, you know, it's just good to be able to go ahead and have that day plan ready for you. Whether you do that at the beginning of the day or whether you do that at the end of the day for the following day, it's just for me is really, really important. So I'm hearing quite a bit of background noise from someone. I'm trying to figure out which one that is.
Yeah, me too. I'm not in a noisy place, though. That sounds like talking in the background.
That's okay. So I just muted whoever.
That's what I'm hearing too.
On. Yeah, that's okay. So hold on 1 second here. I have a 301 area code, and who's that on the line? 301 area code. Okay. Well, either way, I'm just going to go ahead and mute you so that you, if you'd like to come on at any time, just 4-star and you'll be able to be brought back into the line. So don't be shy. And I see that we have John on the line. How's it going, John?
It's going well. How are you?
Good.
Hi, John.
Hi, Michelle.
Hey, we were just asking everyone for sort of initial thoughts on the book and your, of the 21 procrastination busting techniques. That's really tough for me to say for some reason today. but of the 21, which one perhaps was your favorite?
I have to say that I read the book a few years ago. I didn't bother rereading it, but I remember, as Michelle said, thinking that the book was, that a lot of the stuff was very common sense, that, collectively, it's powerful, but my perspective, my change of perspective on just the one habit of doing that one, most difficult thing, to stomach, right? That one ugly thing is, it reminds me of another book that I don't know if anybody has. I think it was available for free. It's called Flinch, and it's a pretty short. It's a short read, but conceptually, it's similar to the idea of sort of doing that taking on that one really difficult thing and getting into the practice of doing that and being able to just dive into something that you don't think that you can really do. You just can't face it. But once you just dive in and do it and you get in the habit of doing it, you just get used to it and just becomes a part of your, it ceases to have the power over you that it once did, just because you, by virtue of making it become a part of your life. And I think that's, so it's mostly taking my learnings from this other book, Flinch, and pairing them with the technique of doing that one ugly thing first thing in the morning. It's, you've won the day, when you're able to do that. So that's my 2 cents.
Awesome. Yeah.
John, what was the name of that? Sorry, John,
Flinch.
What was the name?
It's
Flinch.
It's
okay, got it.
Flinch by Julianne Smith. And I'll make sure to add that to the show notes. So I'll add it's an Amazon Kindle book here in front of me. So I will go ahead and add that to the show notes. So thank you, John. And so we're sort of in that place where we have 21 procrastination tips. Where do we want to begin with it? I, of course, like the type A, behavioral person that I am, I would like to start at the beginning, but I'm happy to jump all over the place and really touch on some of the techniques that we, are sort of talking about at the beginning here about our favorites, but there are some really other very vital and important ones that are in, I like the idea that he talks about decide exactly what you want, basically having some clarity as his first procrastination busting habit. And I think that for all of us, it's really important that we get clear about what it is that we need to do. And I'm sort of curious about, what happens in your own mind when you're procrastinating, or you might feel like you're going to procrastinate, and how clarity really helps you there. I know that it does. I'm curious about how that sort of works in people's minds. Does anybody have any thoughts about how they get clear on things? I know as a GTD-er, my get clear is to move myself through the GTD workflow diagram, so moving stuff to, a next action, or to trash, or to delegate, or, or to wherever it belongs. But primarily, I know that if I need to get to doing, then I need to figure out what that next action is. I'm curious if others on the line have different or other techniques for sort of getting themselves into action by getting clear on what it is they have to do.
Hey, Ray, it's Michelle. I was thinking about that since both Denise and John, pulled out the eat that frog, the big chunk thing. And I realized, that's interesting that that resonated with both of them and a little less with me. And I think it's because I'm, because I still do that procrastination thing. Like, I would rather not eat that frog in the morning. You know, sometimes, and I guess it just made me realize, like, yeah, I think maybe I am not attacking things that way of late, and that's maybe why that really sort of bells did not go off in my head, because they didn't want to. But anyway. So the way I deal with it, though, is I first have to notice that I'm procrastinating, and that usually looks to me like all of a sudden I'm cleaning the closet, I'm vacuuming when I don't know, you know, when it's not my normally scheduled time or whatever. Laundry has to be done, dishes need to be done, you know, that sort of thing. I find myself doing sort of anything but, and then I realize, oh, okay, I'm avoiding something. And then, again, also as a GTDer, I sit down and I try and look at, okay, what is it I'm avoiding and why am I avoiding it? Is it because I really don't want to do the task? Is it because I left it a little too, like, ambivalent? Like, I don't know really what the next step is. Is it something that I really shouldn't even be doing? Maybe it's something that I should be delegating, or maybe it's something that I should decline to do, kind of thing. So there's all sorts of reasons that one might procrastinate, and by one I mean me. sitting down and looking at that stuff is kind of really the only way through it. And then sometimes the answer is you just need to do the thing, and you're just putting it off. So stop doing that and really sit down and eat that frog, kind of thing. So that's my two cents on that.
Just a follow-up, Michelle. I'm curious because, as you said before, you sometimes don't do the big rocks, and that might be an issue for you. You know, for me, I don't have a big rocks kind of perspective when it comes to my day planning, but that's just because I don't really have many big rocks because of GTD. I mean, I find myself in a place where I have lots of next actions, and those next actions are important, but I've sort of done that big rocks planning in my weekly review, and so I tend not to have to put those sort of big rocks up front in order for me to have reduced some of that friction. And I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's something that I might address, but I'm thinking that might be some of the sort of lack of friction, or maybe friction there. Not sure.
Well, for me, I guess. I learned ages ago, like, there was a time when I was managing a lot of different big things like finances and strategy and project planning and resource planning and that sort of thing. And there was a time where I felt that I was letting things fall through the cracks, and I wasn't exactly on top of my game and everything in all those tracks, right? And at that point, that's when I sort of realized, like, no, you know what I need to do? I really need to assign a day for strategic planning, a day that's my finances. So that's sort of like my overall focus for that day. And that helped me make my way through those, you know, all the little tasks that I had planned, that I had put into my, you know, into my system. But because the day is always like the day is when you're working, fires come and, you know, people are knocking on your door and sending you emails and all sorts of stuff. You could easily go down that rabbit hole and never find your way back to what your focus was for the day. And honestly, you know, if you look at, this might be heresy to say, but if you were to look at your entire GTD system, everything that's available to you without any sort of date filtering and, you know, sort of planning out which days you want to focus more on what, you could easily have 100 next items available to you. And then you could just, you know, sort of float from thing to thing and not really and this also might just be my mindset, but I feel like you're not really accomplishing any one thing. You know what I mean? Again, back to me and my procrastination and realizing that there's something I'm procrastinating on. That usually means that it's something big that I really need to focus on, and I haven't really put it in my calendar. Like, okay, today's the day I'm gonna really sit down and think about my website and deal with that instead of just being like, oh, I should research, you know, which host I want to use. I know it sounds
easier to say which
host do I want to use, but there's a whole headspace about getting into that headspace and being like, okay, now I'm going to do this. You know, I don't know.
I get where you're coming from. I think there's a couple things that sort of ring into my mind about that when you talk about it. For example, I have a daily productivity ritual. You know, I start every day with the same set of tasks. You know, I have a little checklist that I follow, and I produce a small card that is in writing. And so I think that I probably do a little bit of the big rocks thing, in the sense that I don't actually write out things that I have to be done, but projects that I want to focus on for that day. And so I have three projects. Yeah. So I have those three projects that are like, these are the things that I'm focusing on today. Sometimes they're really a 20,000 foot level kind of concept, yep. Which for non-GTDers, that's basically your roles and responsibilities in your life. So it might be, I want to be a better brother today. And so that means I'm going to call all of my siblings, and there are a lot of us. So, or there might be something else like that. But I also actually have a monthly category focus, and those monthly categories are, you know, written on my little, you know, index card, half an index card, every day. And so I see that monthly category focus to know that that's part of my every day for that particular month. So I am doing a little bit of that. So I get that. As far as the heresy to GTD is concerned, I think not to worry about it so much. But I think that for people who are overwhelmed and are procrastinating, that it would probably not behoove them to go ahead and, you know, like, think about the 100 plus tasks. Think about the next one.
Right, so and I try and just separate them out by using a little date filtering. But yes, let's not go over the whole call with this. Okay.
No. No, it's good. It's good. It's a good conversation to have for folks. And so others about the clarifying practice.
This is I do the three or four, and they're usually big projects that need to move that week. And then, you know, if my world gets sideways, I note, okay, what frog took over? So I look, and it's actually part of my weekly review to select what frogs I'm going to work on, and then note in my weekly review, what frogs did I zap this week? And I give myself a hurrah on that.
I like that.
It's the only way I can find it. Yeah, 100 tasks. I got one area of focus right now where there's over 500 just because of, and there's nothing I can do about it. And I'll be finished probably by August. So it's starting to get a little insane on my end. So picking out the things that are really, really important and saying, okay, you got to eat these frogs and get that taken care of so that this other stuff is going to flow okay. There's just no way around it. I will be totally sideways if I can't take care of a few bigger frogs that are more important to my areas of focus or responsibility or my goals for the year. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yes, absolutely. Okay, so I want to sort of jump ahead to the sort of the ABCDE method. So unlike GTD, here Brian Tracy gives us sort of the ABCDE prioritization method as one of the options for it. And since we were just talking about some GTD heresy, I thought it'd be fun just for us to talk about prioritization for a little while. And he talks about it being organized by value and priority. And I'm really curious about this thought. What do you folks think about the idea of value and quote-unquote priority-based organizing? I don't do it, and I'm not going to, but I'm curious whether that might actually help some people.
Well, I think we all do actually do this. There's some way that you decide to do this task over that task, and it has to do with the priority of what you think has the most priority for you that day. Or timing, or maybe it's part of the context, like how much energy you have, or what time of day it is, or who you have available to you, or whatever. But that's you do prioritize your tasks in some way. Maybe not.
Yeah, but we're talking about the 1920s concept of like literally putting A, B, C, D, E lists together. You know, like basically labeling something as an A priority versus a B priority. I think that's a little different for me than the idea of saying, oh gosh, this thing needs to be done before that thing, even though they're all, in my mind, equal on my list because I've done my weekly review and I know what needs to be done this week and I've placed them into those days. to be done. You know, like, I don't know. I just see sort of, like, I don't know, A, B, C, D, E prioritization is just sort of that's where that fits to my mind. But you were going to say?
Well, so my understanding, so I just to clarify, my understanding of what he was explaining was not taking a list of 20 items and then attaching them to the alphabet A through whatever 20th letter is, but more like all the important stuff is A, the next step down is B, the next step down is C type thing. And I still think that I still look at my, when I look at my daily list, right, and I've sort of filtered it out to the stuff that I thought I would try and attack on that day, I still look at it in a priority sort of sense, in that I look at what's the big focus, and I do try and get to those things first, because it's so easy for your day to get, you know, to run away. So if you don't plan some time for it, or really try and put some focus on that, you know, earlier in the day than later, it's very easy to not get to those tasks, especially if they're bigger, like bigger thinking type things, or, you know, really need some focus. So I think we probably all internalize the process rather than really sitting down and making an ABC list. But I will say that ABC prioritization is really great when setting agendas. It helps, like, when you have a whole bunch of topics and you have to think about what's important to talk about first. Very helpful there. I just thought I'd throw that in.
Yeah, no, definitely for meetings. So I'm curious about folks' thoughts on this regarding, you know, procrastination, obviously. But the thought here is that if you are procrastinating and you have a decision about what you need to do, and that particular thing is causing you some sort of grief, I feel like putting it in your calendar and blocking out time perhaps might be one option. That doesn't work for everybody, but I think it works very well for me, which is setting aside that amount of thinking time that's going to be necessary, included with the completion of that amount of space. And it's a practice I need to use more. I really do need to block out time in my calendar so that I can have that time for that particular task. But it's still a task that shows up on my task list and has to be completed. And I don't see that as having higher priority than other tasks. You know, like call my dentist and, you know, make the next appointment is equal to, you know, sending out that next email regarding XYZ client. And the reason in my mind they have to be equal to one another is because then I'll never, you know, call the dentist and then, you know, I'll never make that appointment because I'll avoid it because I don't like going to the dentist necessarily. And, you know, so it's like I would focus on, you know, so it's like I think that for if you're struggling with procrastination, you know, the ABCDE method, you know, is one technique. But really, if you're going to prioritize things, maybe using different methods for being able to capture your interest could be really helpful, you know. So prioritize through different tools, that is using your calendar, your task list, your project list, and perhaps, you know, sort of putting them in different, like, modes, you know, different formats, like a mind map or something like that helps you sort of visually attack things to sort of move them around. But for me, I don't know, ABCD doesn't really, maybe if you put it as a high, medium, and low value, maybe that might be a little bit more appealing to me, but I guess I just have a visceral, you know, reaction to the ABCDE method, I guess. How about others?
I can just say that I don't have a visceral reaction as you do, but I tried it, and you know, thinking that it would work, and it never did. So that's just so to me, that's all I need to know. You know, it doesn't. I didn't get any. You know. It's probably, you know, personal thing, but you know, and I didn't get any more of the high priority things done than I did with, you know, not using it. So it doesn't really didn't serve purpose.
Mm.
Yeah, so I wouldn't do it. If it actually worked, if I, you know, by going through that process, I really don't. I guess it goes to I think what Michelle was saying, that we all sort of intuitively make these. I think that's part of the GT methodology, that you're It was just, you have a list and you can intuitively make decisions about what to do at any given time. And, you know, if there's some really big thing that you're not doing, you know, like what's, you know, is there a really bad thing that's going to happen if you don't do it? And if a really bad thing is not going to happen if you don't do it, then you're probably not going to, you know, or, you know, the next level, you know, some really good thing is going to happen if you do it. You know, there's these different, you know, levels of scariness, I guess, to me, that sort of end up driving more of my behavior. That's me.
Yeah, and so that's one of the techniques that Brian Tracy talks about, this idea of like thinking about the consequences. What are the consequences of you procrastinating on this particular thing? And so expand upon that a little bit for me, John, in terms of like what's, you know, scary in terms of, you know, what's going to get you to action through that sort of, you know, fear.
So some of that's an interesting question. So in some respects, it's just a ghost. There is actually nothing particularly scary about the thing. It's, So what I've been doing lately, which seems to work, is, you know, I use fancy hands. Say, so like your example of making the appointment to go to the doctor. Or go to the dentist or whatever. There's not something that's really keeping me from going other than, you know, stopping and making that call and having to have that immediate conversation of, you know, what time is available. And then so what I do is if it's just me, it's just, you know, someone on my end needs to talk to somebody on the other end to arrange a time for something. I give it a fancy hand. Let's say, hey, call a doctor and make me an appointment for this thing. And then that kind of the worst part of it is out of my hands. So I don't know if that is in any way helpful.
Yeah, that's great. That helps. That gives me the opportunity to tell everybody about fancy hands. So, fancy hands is a great service, and I think that's really great. I think I should probably utilize them more for those kinds of things. I tend to utilize them mostly for research in my world, but they can certainly do that, and they do it very well. Is sort of making those call appointments and sort of handling those mundane things. And I guess it's because I don't see them as necessarily mundane. I look at them as equals in terms of my task list. I tend not to delegate as much, but I probably should. And in a way, that probably brings back Michelle's thoughts on prioritizing. You know, your time is valuable, and there are certain things that you should be delegating and that I should be delegating that, you know, I wouldn't otherwise, because I think of, you know, I sort of think of it as sort of like the dentist is my own personal health care, and I should be an active participant in it. And so therefore I'm going to make that phone call myself. And so it's like, it's sort of circular, but it also ends up being self-defeating in a lot of ways, because it's taking time out of my day that somebody else could handle that.
Exactly. It's, you know, I mean, you're showing up at the appointment is your investment in taking care of yourself.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that could be outsourced. And so that also, you know, there's a double-edged sword to Brian Tracy's discussion here, because he talks about the positive side of consequences. You know, the sort of there are good consequences and bad consequences to achieving, you know, doing some particular thing that you're procrastinating on. And it sort of just sounds to me like a pro-con list. And so I'm curious, what are other folks' thoughts on this idea of sort of looking at the benefits and possibly the disadvantages or consequences, the negative consequences of not doing something as a means for getting you out of a procrastination mode?
I mean, I guess I could not having practiced this, I can, you know, I'll just offer my thoughts on it. You know, just getting, I think getting that, my battery's going to die soon. That's a bummer. What I was going to say was sort of getting clear on what the consequences are could be useful. You know, is what is he, it's been a while since I read the book, how does he talk about getting clear on the consequences? Does he offer specific techniques for doing that?
I'm drawing a blank right now, but I believe he basically just says to outline those particular pros and cons, those good and bad consequences, and then the basic premise behind it all is to focus on those consequences first, you know, to like focus on those things as your primary driver, as your primary motivator.
I took some notes on that chapter. And it seemed to me like he was talking more about long-term versus short-term consequences. Like, if I don't do that, so he said something, let's see what it said. Successful people have a clear future orientation. They analyze their choices and behaviors and present to make sure they know what they're doing today is consistent with their long-term future that they desire. So I think he was talking more about that. And then he said something about, like, time is going to pass anyway. The only question is how you are. Oh, my God, I didn't write this all verbatim, so sorry. It's sort of choppy English. The only question is how are you now, and where are you going to end up in the weeks, months that come fast? Where you end up is largely a matter of the amount of consideration you give to the likely consequences of your actions in the short term. So it's sort of how your short-term actions have an impact on your long-term future. That helpful?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you would always look at your long-term and short-term consequences, I would hope, as it relates to your long-term planning. But as it relates to procrastination is always going to be about me not doing now what I plan to do now. And
right,
so using any of those consequences as a means for motivating you to do and act now, I think is really important. So I think that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So does that help, John? I don't know if we're going to lose you.
Yeah. No, that's
your battery. That's
helpful. I'm going to try to. I really messed up with my. I grabbed the wrong charger. So.
Oh, I
hate that. I just like when that happens. Well, for as long as we have you, we'll have you. But the thing that I really enjoy doing about sort of setting up sort of pros and cons for things is I like looking at them from a perspective of how are these good things against these bad things sort of weighted for me, and I look at them from sort of three different areas of weight. You know, if you want to create a weighted score of something, you sort of look at the various criterion and then, you know, build up the criteria to a number. And so there are lots of different methods. The Pugh method does that. PUGH matrix is there for that, and other kinds of methods. And I've developed one myself. And so I use the Covey-Merrill matrix, or the Merrill-Covey matrix, you know, the important and urgency concepts, and then basically a time-based due date, and that can be arbitrary even, but as long as I know when I want to achieve that, whether that be immediate in the short term or in the long term or near long term, then that gives it a particular weight to me. And then finally, what's in it for me? Like, what's the benefit to me in terms of getting things done? And so if I look at it from those three different perspectives, is it important, urgent, and that means is it important and or urgent to me, but also what is the value? Is it going to provide me something of high value back to me? You know, it might be important to me because it might, you know, it might make me feel good for doing something for others, but also it's really important for me to remember that it needs to benefit me in some way, shape, or form. And so looking at the value that it brings me, the what's in it for me, you know, WIIFM station, you have to look at it from that perspective as well. And then, of course, thinking about how important is the due date or the timeliness of that particular item. And for several years, I used that. I literally calculated on a 10-point scale those numbers. So the value to me, 1, 2, 3, the time-based would be immediate, near-term, and then long-term. And then the four quadrants of the Merrill-Covey matrix would equate to four points. So it would be a total of 10 points. And I would actually track every single task in my GTD Excel spreadsheet. And that's actually pre-GTD. So that was in my Covey spreadsheet that then became my GTD system when I made the transition over to GTD. And so I would track for all the time. I would track all, you know, everything would have basically a point system, and the system would be shuffled every day up to that, you know, based on that, those numbers, and I would complete them in that order. And so I found it to be absolutely ridiculous, by the way. So
I was just going to ask you that.
It was a lot of fun to do. I actually admit it was a lot of fun to do as somebody who likes doing that. But for actually the concept of getting things done, it's absolutely ridiculous. But what I found it really wonderful for was for project prioritization and for project planning perspectives for future stuff. So I then converted that over, and now I do that during my quarterly and annual reviews of my work, is that I will place that number on things to see what and how they're of value to me, and that's now going to decide going forward how I decide to do something. So I may or may not do something based on that particular item. So really, really interesting to be able to give yourself values systems to prioritize consequences.
Right, that's very interesting and definitely something that I could see getting totally geeky into. Like I could see myself doing exactly the same thing, but I may have a simpler system for you.
Sure.
I kind of just started doing internally, and it's more because I'm doing, you know, freelance work now, so it's really more about choice rather than like a million things that are sort of piled onto my plate that I have to do, although there is still that. But I've been using Mike Vardy's version of pro and con. Does it make you say hell yes, or does it make you say hell no? And you go with either one. And you decide. And I'm like, you know what? That works pretty damn well.
I've seen that system. I'll have to take that under advisement.
Well, because the brilliance of it is if you really have a hell yes response to it, that means you're motivated enough to actually do the stuff, and it doesn't end up being drudgery and whatnot, you know. And you don't have to convince yourself. There's no like, there's not that like whole routine going on. So if you can have more hell yes projects in your world, you'll be happier. You'll be more efficient, more excited about doing the projects that are in your world. So you know what I mean? So it's kind of like it's kind of a brilliant thing that you just like, oh well, of course that makes sense.
I completely understand. It's certainly an interesting concept, and there are areas in my life where they are drudgery.
Right. Right.
And I have to do them. And so I get it. It's totally cool. So I'm going to switch gears back to the two sort of numbers games that Brian Tracy talks about. He talks about the law of three, identifying those three things you do in your work that account for 90% of your, contribution or value to the organization. And then he also talks about the Pareto principle or the 80-20 rule in terms of, you know, always basically discounting the things that are of least value and doing the 20% that provides the 80% of the, bulk of the results that you do in, or have in life. And I'm curious about folks' use of that. Do you do that? It sort of sounds big rock concept to me, you know, like basically focusing on the big rocks. But I'm curious, do you ever do that mental math, considering I clearly love to quantify and do math myself?
Hey, it's Michelle. I would say, yeah, the law of three is something that I try and focus on. It really is big rocks. What are the important things, right? And really making sure that you're focusing on those things. And the 80-20 rule really is just about doing the important tasks first, not playing with the little things.
And how work for you, I always think about this when I look at Eat That Frog. I always think about it from, how is this going to help me not procrastinate? Like,
right.
does that actively work in terms of overcoming procrastination for you?
Sure, because that's exactly what I was talking about. The 80-20 rule is like, okay, I'll do all these little things because they're not as daunting, they're not as scary, they have to get done, so they must be important, right? Like you do that whole routine in your head, and it's kind of like no, those things aren't, they aren't super important. I mean, yes, say you need to call your dentist and you haven't done it for 3 months because you've been putting it off, then obviously that's no longer one of the 80% side. That's more of the 20% side. So that is important, then you should do it, but it's not as important as making sure that the invoices go out that mean that your business can stay alive. You know what I mean? So, and if for whatever, if there's something about that particular task that, you know, makes you not want to do it, you'll very easily, or at least I will, very easily turn to the bunch of minutiae that I can accomplish and that won't, you know, make me feel, that way and will be easy to do. So that's when I notice that I'm procrastinating. When I find that I am doing those tasks, that's what gives me the heads up, like, okay, there's something you're avoiding, you know? So I do think it helps with procrastination, just even being aware of that.
Right, right. And one of the things that he talks about is, I think it's in the 11th sort of technique, which is to sort of like learn new skills. And I'm curious about this, how it relates to procrastination, because I am someone who, I mean, I just love learning. So I love the idea of learning new skills and learning new techniques for doing things. It's, you know, why I'm here on Productivity Book Group. And, you know, it's just really fascinating to me that that's a, you know, he's giving us an opportunity to focus on bettering our skill set. And I think that's really powerful. And I'm curious how people have used that from a procrastination perspective. So I'll say for myself, I know that when I don't feel adequate to handle something, you know, competent to represent a particular client in a particular matter or whatever it might be, and yet they still want me to do it, that's when I will procrastinate, you know, because I'm like, oh gosh, you know, I'm not going to do a stellar job on it. I'm not going to do 110% like I'm used to. And so therefore I don't want to do it at all. And so I think that it makes a lot of sense for me, because I will then say, okay, well, let me start off doing this by learning everything I can in as short a period of time, you know, very similar to the Josh Kaufman book that we read recently, The First 20 Hours, is now using the RSA, the Rapid Skills, the Rapid Skills, help me, Michelle, Rapid Skills Acquisition, a Rapid Skills Acquisition model to be able to onboard those skills, so that then I'm addressing the issue of not what I'm not doing right now because I'm feeling incompetent to do it.
So this is Denise, and I think it's a great way to get yourself from procrastinating, especially if it's something that you just, I had one earlier this week where it's stuff I have to do all the time. It drives me crazy because it's just a pain. And I said, you know, there must be a way to make this faster, quicker, better. And so I did that for a couple hours, and then, which led me into getting everything that I needed to do done, just because I didn't figure out a way to do it quicker, faster, better. And it was some keystrokes that I needed to learn that I didn't know, so I wasn't clicking the mouse all the time, and just little things. It wasn't huge skill sets that I was trying to overcome, but it, just learning a few things made it so much easier to push that paper out.
Yeah, I think that's really important. One of the big tickets that I take away from anything that I read about procrastination is that there's sort of two, it's a sort of a binary. It's one, get over it and do it right now. You know, it's sort of like get over yourself, get over the issue, get over the emotional burden and do that. And the other side to that, the off switch, is that you sort of have to take a little bit of a detour off of doing it now to actually get yourself emotionally comfortable with getting back to doing it now, or doing it in a little while from now, you know, that is learning a little bit of something, or figuring out what those key constraints are so that you can then overcome those issues and come back onto the path and keep on running. You know, it's really, you know, I always in my own mental space do a lot of running analogies. As a runner, I find myself in that place where I'm like, I'm on the running trail. What's going to keep me from continuing to run? Oh, I need to go ahead and tie my shoelaces. Well, learning to tie my shoelaces better and faster equates to me stopping, you know, tying my shoelaces and getting back on the course faster. So I absolutely agree, Denise. I think it's really important and powerful for us to know that learning and becoming and improving our skills, even the ones we already have, can be really powerful for overcoming procrastination. So in our last couple of minutes, I want to talk about the idea of putting pressure on yourself. What does that mean for you? How do you do it? And, you know, he uses sort of the example, you know, that you have to leave on a trip, and therefore what would you do to get yourself ready before you left? And I think in a lot of ways I do that because I use the sort of morbid concept of if this was your last day on the planet, what would you do? But what do you do in terms of applying this kind of pressure? Are there other ways that you can apply pressure other than thinking about just leaving on a trip or potentially passing away? Or not potentially, I mean, you know, whatever.
I kind of just live in that state. I'm my worst critic kind of thing. I was actually shocked. There was something he wrote in that chapter about, and I wrote it down. He said only about 2% of people can work entirely without supervision, and that we call these people leaders. And I was like, really? Shocked. Really? It just seems crazy to me.
Yeah, I didn't really understand where he's coming from with that. Provide a little bit of context.
I didn't write down the context. To me,
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, so then another bite I grabbed from that chapter was your self-esteem, the core of your personality, has been defined by psychologist Nathaniel Branden as the reputation you have with yourself. And I think that's kind of like, that's really the crux of it. It's the reputation you have with yourself. Like, are you okay with not doing, you know, your 110%? Are you okay with not, you know, not coming through on that project, not coming through on that promise you made to somebody? Are you okay with being, you know, being with that? And that's, I would have to say that I'm the hardest on myself. More so than anybody else. Wow, that was so not correct English, but you know what I mean.
No, we totally get it. And I think to some extent, we should be our, I hate to use shoulds, but we should be our best or worst critic or whatever it is.
Right.
I don't know. I think that's a really good thing. I think that's what makes us high achievers. I don't think there's anybody who's listening to the podcast or who joins us here on Productivity Book Group. You know, we're all high achievers. And high achievers equate to people who are tough critics of the people who do work for them, tough people for the work that they do themselves. They have high standards. And I think that we all can take a little bit of compassion for ourselves at times, but I think that's the pressure that actually drives us to do great things,
right.
At least to do good things. So I think it's important for us all to take heed to that. And in terms of us, you know, there's a management theory that basically says there are leaders and followers, and then there are fakers. Leaders are people who are leading at a particular time. Followers are followers who are not leading at a particular time, and that they're interchangeable roles. So, for example, you might say, hey, Ray, would you like to go to the movies? And, you know, in a group of us, you know, here on the call, and some of us just basically don't have any input or whatever. And so you end up becoming the leader because you say, okay, well, let's go see this movie at this time. Is everybody cool with that? And everybody agrees. Well, that made you the leader in that moment. Are you the leader all the time? No. But that's what leaders and followers are all about. You know, leaders are the leaders because they step up to the plate when necessary. Basically, fakers are those people who attempt to lead when it's inappropriate for them to be in that role. That is, that they lack the requisite skills to be a leader in that particular environment at that particular time. And so I tend to use that as the definition for what leadership is. You know, I was doing a tweet chat yesterday or the day before, and one of the students in the chat posted a picture, and it showed good leadership at the top, and it was sort of like a pharaoh sitting on a throne and had sort of slaves pulling the throne forward, you know, this big dais that he was sitting on. And then it showed good leadership, and it was the leader at the front of the line with the other people pulling the stage or the dais with him, telling everybody which direction in which to lead. And I thought that was a really great visualization of what leadership really is. So we have to wrap up. So I want to get any final thoughts anyone has on, Eat That Frog, any one of the techniques that we didn't talk about that you absolutely wanted to get your thoughts in on, and that way we can wrap up the call. So any big ticketed items, any big rocks?
I would say that I really, chapter 12 really resonated with me, and that it was called Leverage Your Special Talents. And it was mm-hmm. about really looking at, like, what are you good at? What do you most enjoy about your work? If you could do any job at all, which would it be? And sort of the idea of, as much as possible, doing what you love to do, you know? And because that really is going to help you with motivation and not procrastinating on stuff. And, you know, it's obviously everything that you do has some part of it that you don't love. But if on balance, more of it is what you love than what you hate, you have a much nicer life that you're living. So I thought that was an important one.
I totally agree. That's a really great way to cap the conversation. And I would say that there's so many good nuggets of information in here. And to sort of tie in what Denise said at the beginning of the call, which was that, you know, this is really a book about motivation and less about procrastination, because, you know, it's really about getting you to move and to change habits. And as many people know, my big ticket items are focus, habit, and motivation. And, you know, really the motivational aspect of Brian Tracy's writing is really what's key in this book. So if you haven't read it, I recommend that you go out and check it out. And with that, we're going to wrap up the conversation. Thank you, everybody. And so, as is the tradition here on Productivity Book Group, to end every call with my favorite quotation from our book's current reading selection, here it is. The key to happiness, success, great satisfaction, and a wonderful feeling of personal power and effectiveness is for you to develop the habit of eating your frog first thing every day when you start work. End quote. Thank you, Brian Tracy. Well, that finishes out this Productivity Book Group discussion for Eat That Frog, Get More of the Important Things Done Today by Brian Tracy. I have a few announcements. First, our next Productivity Book Group call will take place on April 19th. That's Saturday, April 19th at noon Eastern, where we will have our first discussion covering chapters 1 through 6 of How to Find Out Anything. The subtitle is really long, so hold on a second. So it's How to Find Out Anything, From Extreme Google Searches to Scouring Government Documents, A Guide to Uncovering Anything About Everyone and Everything. And that's by Don McLeod. And so next, all information about Productivity Book Group is posted to productivitybookgroup.org. So productivitybookgroup.org. And the podcasts are archived there under episodes. Our upcoming books are posted for the next few months on the website under upcoming books. So go check it out if you'd like to read ahead or plan to read a book a little more slowly. Head on over to the website and you can find those under the upcoming reading selections. And I hope you'll be able to join us for the live call on April 19th, noon Eastern, or you can subscribe in iTunes or elsewhere to listen to the archives. Thanks everyone who joined me here on the live call, and here's to your productive life.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Have a great weekend. Thank you.